If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Hi, I'm Sean Evans from Hot Ones, and I want to tell you about YouTube Premium. It has offline downloads, so you can watch without Wi-Fi. Background play, so you can lock your phone, and it still plays, baby. Oh, and it is completely ad-free. Yes, I said it, ad-free. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
What is it like to survive a serial killer? What does that do to a person? What trauma does that leave behind? Those are the questions I want to ask Mark Henderson. Mark is an actor, a model, and an activist who's well known inside Toronto's gay village. But more importantly, he is a survivor. Now, Mark calls himself a victim. He's taken ownership of that term. And that's because in 2001, Mark had a violent encounter with serial killer Bruce MacArthur. In fact, Mark is the first known victim of Bruce MacArthur. And what you'll hear from Mark is not just his personal account of surviving a serial killer, it's the aftermath, the police apathy that may have allowed MacArthur to continue to get away with it.
As I go around the world living my life and being me, I refer to myself as a victim of the serial killer Bruce MacArthur, and I am his first victim. I'm not offended by that word.
And you find it empowering, or?
Have you ever had a friend who's in a wheelchair? 10 minutes after you start talking, you forget they're in a wheelchair. You see the person. So words aren't that important in
Fair
this
enough.
Situation.
Well, when did this happen, Mark?
I was promoting the movie Planet of the Apes with Mark Wahlberg and Tim Burton in 2001. And I came out of a TV station here in Toronto and biked home. And I saw this guy. It was Halloween day at noon by the time I got home. And I thought, oh, he's that guy I always had to say hello to. He'd go out of his way to put himself in my trajectory, locked my bike up, and then began to walk towards the door. I took the back entrance. I could see his car and I could see him. He had been stalking me for a while and I had spent months trying to get the police to take action, and they didn't think men could be stalked. And he was my problem, but he wasn't like a problem that I was afraid of him. It was a problem that it was just really awkward and creepy.
Oh, so you had seen Bruce around the village.
I'd seen him around, that's for sure.
And for months and months by this point.
Months and months.
Did you know his name? Like, had you asked people about him? Like, what had you seen around the village?
I hadn't asked his name, but I remember the first time I met him, he kicked my shin and said, and I said, ouch. And he said, what's wrong? You don't have a sense of humor? And I was performing at a bar, so I kind of felt like I had to do good customer service or whatever. I just was always avoiding him. I didn't like him at all.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's kind of like this man on the outskirts of the community at this time.
I would say he was sort of just regular. Anyways, I went to the door of our building and I unlocked the door. And my unit was on the ground floor about 20 feet in. And he came in behind me, was jovial talking to me. I had no sort of anxiety. You know, I'm anxious talking to you right now. And that's a normal thing because I want to do a good job. But with him behind me, it was like a crocodile. Like, I was not nervous. I didn't even really take note of him being there too much. I thought he was going right past me because the next door down was the office for the management of the building.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I unlocked the door and it opened, I felt this whack. And I thought part of the ceiling had fallen in on us. The 9/11 had just happened. And so I didn't understand what was happening. I ended up having defense wounds on my hand. He broke this arm and fractured my skull. So he must have whacked me a few times before I figured out I needed to fight. I don't remember. Sometimes the memories are really clear and sometimes it's really foggy or distant or slow motion. And we tussled into the apartment because I wanted to get to my phone after I kind of shoved him back with two legs. And I picked up a candlestick that I had, and we sort of sparred each other for a minute. And then I thought, if I'm about to die, I couldn't hear anything. There was a ringing in my ears and there was fluid and blood pouring down my face. And I thought, if I'm going to die, the last thing I'm doing on this planet is not hitting him. I ran to the phone. I couldn't hear if people were listening. I was just saying what he was wearing. And I was just talking. I couldn't hear anything. It was very traumatic. Mm-hmm. I was in a lot of pain, but the worst thing was I couldn't hear. And he was looking for the end of the phone cord. He was walking around the apartment, pulling and pulling like this. And it had just been the 90s where we all walked around our apartments talking on big, long extension cords. He couldn't find the end of it. He eventually left and 911 showed up.
Did you ever find out what the weapon was that he used to attack you?
Oh, I can tell you what it was. Yeah. And there's several reasons I have for why I think I was his first real violent attack, because he didn't know how to kill a man. And that was evident.
You feel it was disorganized in that way?
He changed his MO. Instead of going to anyone else's place, he needed to have full control, drugged, tied up, and then murdered the other eight men that were involved. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where he concealed it, but you know the sleeve they have on like a kind of a cheap set of weights?
Yeah.
And it's sort of a corrugated sleeve out of aluminum or tin.
Almost like a lead pipe almost kind of situation?
Yeah, yeah. So it slides over the weights that are usually iron, and it gives you your hands a better grip, or I don't know, looks better. But it was one of those. Mm-hmm. So he just grabbed it, I guess, and stuffed it either down his leg, or I don't know how he had it concealed, because I saw him head to toe, and I don't have one of those pipes in my apartment. Mm-hmm. And it did some pretty good damage, but it wasn't enough. He changed after this.
How long do you think you were, because he followed you into the apartment? That to me is just terrifying, this idea that you would be in this apartment, he's attacked you, you're trying to shake out the cobwebs, and you describe him grabbing the phone cord as if he's almost stalking. It's almost animalistic as you're describing it. Do you remember, do you have good memories of that time period when you're alone with him in the apartment and you're attempting to make a phone call?
My parents took me home from the hospital when I was released, when it was either the next day or the day after, I can't remember. But we went and looked, his vehicle was still parked in the spot. And the ticket said 12:33, and my 911 call ended as the team arrived at 9:38 or 12:38. So it was only like a matter of 5 minutes for the EMS to get here. So I wasn't on my own for very long. And that included, from 12:33 to 12:38, included the attack and then the arrival of the EMS. So it was fast.
And this is the attack in which they interviewed MacArthur, right? This is the afterwards they did pick him up and talk to him, correct?
He left from where he saw me in my apartment on the phone describing his outfit. Like, I just read his outfit. And so he left and went immediately to headquarters and said, I guess you're looking for me. I just had a fight with Mark Henderson. And so they popped him there, but he was like, the interview at that stage would imagine the police didn't do much of an interview at that point, really. They probably just threw him into the system. He had to go before a judge. He was in jail for 2 or 3 days because his car was still here. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what they did as far as interviews. I can tell you, in the subsequent interviews of the other people, the media's made a great fuss that the police had him in. They had him in here. They have him in again. Some of those interviews in police headquarters, or 52 division, I think, with the detectives that were there, were less than 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to plastic surgery, expertise matters, and CAP sets the standard. Our team includes 7 nationally ranked, board-certified plastic surgeons. From tummy tucks, breast augmentation, and liposuction to facelifts and beyond, every surgical plan is tailored to your body, goals, and recovery timeline. CAPS is trusted for consistent, visible outcomes. Plus, when you book your surgical consultation, you'll receive a $100 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Expert care, exceptional results. Visit experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
He just said, oh, it was a gay thing. We're fighting on Halloween. Two gay guys fighting in the back of a van. He just skidded all over it. And I think the officers had, there was a pattern of them being homophobic, disgusted by the gay community, that kind of thing. So when he came in and just dumped a believable story on the table, they could all leave that room and he could go that way and the cops could go that way and justice really didn't happen. Mm-hmm. I was called a liar right from the beginning. There was a detective named Detective Harms, and I probably shouldn't say his name, but I don't care. I'm only telling the truth, you know. And I said, he's lying. And Detective Harms sort of leaned in and growled at me and said, I think you're both lying. So the other weird thing about this, that was 2001. It's 2026 now. To this day, I have never met or been interviewed by Toronto police in regards to my attack.
Not even afterwards, after he was caught, not even then.
No, not at all. I've never met with an officer about this. So they right from the get-go, I think it was because I was an actor. Mm-hmm. I was a performer. I was wildly openly gay and having fun with it. I think that they just dismissed me and thought, those guys will work it out.
Yeah. I mean, it's shocking to hear that a police officer in Toronto or anywhere would accuse a victim. I mean, you're hit from behind. I mean, this is not something that can be disputed. You're attacked from behind. And to hear that an officer would dismiss a victim and say, oh, I think you're lying, or this is, dismiss it like that. I mean, it's just appalling. And the second thing that I find very, very shocking about your whole account is that once MacArthur was arrested, it doesn't sound like, I know the Toronto Police Service has looked into cold cases, but you would think that they would want to interview all the people who met MacArthur, who were survivors of MacArthur, like yourself, to get an understanding of him, to get an understanding of where he was, of what he was doing, so they can put these pieces together. And to hear that they haven't even interviewed a public survivor, someone who's come out and said, this happened to me, that's shocking.
I was angry. I was so mad at the police that they weren't interviewing me. And do you know the behavior panel? There's one of the pundits on there is a guy named Chase, and he said it so well, and I just burst into tears when he said it, because I needed that empathy from someone. He said, when somebody's got a complaint and they know they're right and they know who did it, mm-hmm. they're angry. And they stay angry over and over and over again. And that's how you can tell when someone's telling the truth. And that was the first time, and this was recently, this was maybe 2018, that he said this. And from that point on, I began to grow again, because somebody finally believed me that I wasn't making this up. There was no way to take an encounter with a serial killer and 8 dead people. That's not something I can turn to a agent or a publicist and say, now let's go and get me a big movie or a TV series. It doesn't work like that. This was the end of almost all of that for me. Mm. And in fact, he clocked me twice. I lost a lot of ground that first year. It took me a few years to get back. It took me a while to walk and to, be able to go outside. And I didn't think I had PTSD, but I look back and of course I did.
Yeah.
And the second time they arrested him, the media clocked me again, because right off the bat, they started saying I was a sex worker and it was a trick gone wrong. And when you're 21 and someone says you're a sex worker and it's a trick gone wrong, that could be very destructive to a young person. The police here have not been good. During the Bruce MacArthur incident. Our chief was Chief Saunders, mm-hmm. and I don't like him at all. He was a nut. But a girl went missing. Her name was Tess Ritchie. And so in the gay community, she'd been out drinking with her friends and disappeared. And the police were doing nothing. In fact, they went to the media and said she was working as an escort and out and up to misadventures. Now, I don't know about you, but the gay in the town is, it's fun. I wouldn't call it misadventures.
No,
the way they were characterizing this, they did nothing to find this girl. And finally, a few days later, it was her birthday. She was still missing. The mother drove from Timmins, Ontario, got out of her car, parked it, walked 50 feet, looked down at a stairwell and said, "That's my daughter. That's her body."
Oh, geez. That's a tragic story. Tragic story. So in the MacArthur case, so the police never charged MacArthur with attacking you. He was never found. I know they investigated it to some small degree, but he was never charged or held to account for attacking you.
He was almost given like a golden kiss from the judge, who said, "Look, you seem to be a nice guy. I think you got in over your head, and I don't think you're going to come back." He also sailed through psychiatric assessments. I also, on the advice of a lawyer, went through psychiatric assessments.
Have you ever sought to speak to MacArthur or sought...
I have nothing to say to him.
Mm-hmm.
And there are several people in my life who will contact me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, whatever, and say I'm writing him a letter, and I instantly block them. I have no time for that.
Mm-hmm.
And, I owe him nothing, you know. I sued. I'm not allowed to say who I sued, but it was a big, powerful, uniformed group here in Toronto. I got an enormous amount of money. I wanted it to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And every time they countered with what wasn't what I was asking for, I'd add another million to it.
Mm-hmm.
I became very angry about that. Okay, there's a serial killer, 8 dead persons, mm-hmm. and then a guy... Me, they're accusing of loving too much. Well, don't feel sorry for me. I had the easiest role in that. The people who paid the real price were the 8 who were deceased and their families. They were largely marginalized South Asian men of color who were immigrating to Canada, who didn't have the system like I have it at my... I have more advantages because I'm here. And their families around the world are just something terrible happened to our uncle, our son, our brother, and they're still dealing with it. They just, it's like a dark secret for them. Mm-hmm. It was a terrible time. And to create openings in that or try and be a source of light or love, it was like I was speaking a foreign language to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I had odd behaviors for a while. Like I was very afraid to go out. I didn't like people standing behind me. There was a lot of fallout from having stuff like this happen. I wish someone had been there to kind of say to me, "This is it." The second time they arrested him, I immediately got a therapist named Mara Robert, and she was amazing. I still miss her to this day. Just to have a safe place, and I went in and I said to her, "We're not fixing me yet. I just want to get on that witness stand and destroy him. And that's the only thing Canada will respect, is if I get up there and do the job." In the end, I didn't have to.
They didn't call you to testify at the end, in his eventual trial, I'm assuming because he pled guilty.
I think the police were regarding me as a loose cannon because they had suddenly realized that they messed up so much with me.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to take me on too much. You know, I finally got my settlement, and that made a huge difference because now I'm able to eat and able to relax a bit and just press ahead. I do a lot of work within the community. You know, when people, let's just say I'm able to give people the medicine I didn't get.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was telling a friend today, last night I dreamt that the police chief, the current one, was arresting me and broke my arm. And, I have very strange dreams. I'm not in control of my mind all the time, especially at night. It's terrifying. I don't like going out at night. There's a lot of weird fallouts, but I just have had to forge a life with whatever I had. If it's been left on my plate by the gods, I then decided just to use whatever was there.
Well, yeah, Mark, I can't imagine what you went through, and to hear that you never received justice for it is just heartbreaking. But I just want to thank you for sharing this story with us. It's incredible.
I have two friends, and they were lifelong friends from, you know, grade 8, grade 9, high school stuff, and a guy and a gal, and I never heard from them again. And it's too much. It's a lot. And, you know, when I am dating or meeting other people or whatever, they're okay if they don't know it. But once they do know the story, they get freaked out, like as if I'm going to call something dark out again. So I don't often know what to do with a lot of that stuff, and I'm not in control of it. So I just try and do the best I can, try and be honest, open. And I try not to put myself in situations. If I'm walking along and I see a problem ahead of me, I walk around it. I don't go over there to sort it out or fix them or give them advice. That's not my job in life. I want to die an old man in his sleep. And, you know, safety is a very important thing to me.
Got stubborn spots, unwanted hair, or uneven skin? The CAPS Laser Center offers advanced solutions. They offer a full range of advanced laser treatments like Halo and Moxie that help reveal smoother, clearer, healthier-looking skin. CAPS is one of the top providers in the world for laser treatments, and their expert team delivers personalized care every step of the way. When you book your first Laser Center appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. So don't wait. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
A burst pipe, a dead water heater, the AC calling it quits. Who do you call? HomeServe is an easy way to handle unexpected home repairs with plans covering stuff basic homeowners insurance usually won't. Instead of scrambling for a contractor, you make one call to get the repair process started. Join the millions of customers who trust HomeServe right now. Go to homeserve.com/podcast for 50% less your first year. That's homeserve.com/podcast. Savings compared to renewal price. Void in Florida.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.